Pipapadeguro Vatya Saddhi Shutam Tasya Savam Kunjara Sochava Yasya Saksad Bhagavati Jnanadipa Prade Guru Matya Saddhi Shutam Tasya Savam Kunjara Sochava. One who Saksat directly Bhagavati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Jnanadipa Prade, who enlightens with the torch of knowledge, Guru, unto the spiritual master, Marja Asati. Consider the spiritual master to be like an ordinary human being. Maintain such an unfavorable attitude. Shrutam, Vedic knowledge. Tasya, for him. Sarvam, everything. Kunjara Sochavat, like the bath of an elephant in a lake. Translation, the spiritual master should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord because he gives transcendental knowledge for enlightenment. Consequently, for one who maintains a material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, everything is frustrated. His enlightenment and his Vedic studies and knowledge are like the bathing of an elephant. Please repeat. The spiritual master, should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord because he gives transcendental knowledge for enlightenment. Consequently, for one who maintains the material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, everything is frustrated. His enlightenment and his Vedic studies and knowledge are like the bathing of an elephant. Purport, it is recommended that one honor the spiritual master as being in an equal status with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Saksad Daritvena Samasta Shastraya. This is enjoined in every scripture. Acharyam mam vijaniyat. One should consider the Acharya to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In spite of all these instructions, if one considers the spiritual master an ordinary human being, one is doomed. His studies of the Vedas and his austerities and penances for enlightenment are all useless, like the bathing of an elephant. An elephant bathes in a lake quite thoroughly, but as soon as it comes on the shore, it takes some dust from the ground and strews it over its body. Thus there's no meaning to the elephant's bath. One may argue by saying that since the spiritual master's relatives and the men of his neighborhood consider him an ordinary human being, what is the fault on the part of the disciple who considers the spiritual master an ordinary human being? This will be answered in the next verse, but the injunction is that the spiritual master should never be considered an ordinary man. One should strictly adhere to the instructions of the spiritual master, for if he is pleased, certainly the Supreme Personality of God is pleased. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasadu yasya prasadana kati katopi. So again, the verse yasya saksad bhagavati jnana deepa prade guru Matya Saddhi Shutam Tasya Sarvam Kunjara Sochava. The spiritual master should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord because he gives transcendental knowledge for enlightenment. Consequently, for one who maintains the material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, everything is frustrated. His enlightenment and his Vedic studies and knowledge are like the bathing of an elephant. So there's the verse in Bhagavad Gita. Yasyatma buddhi kuna petri datu ke swadhi kalatradi shu bhoma ichshadi yatirta buddhi salilena kari chit gyaneshva bigyeshu saeva gokaraha. That one who considers this body to be the self and who has a attraction for an intimate relationship with his family members, who considers the land of his birth to be worshipable, and who goes to holy places simply to take bath, but is not interested in hearing from the saintly persons there, he is to be considered as no better than a cow or an ass. So human life, therefore, means to engage in spiritual activities and to accept spiritual authority. Ahara nidra bayo maitunam cha samanyam etad pasubir naranam dharmo hitesho adiko viseso dharmena hina pasubi samanam. This verse means that both human beings and animals share the propensities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But the special quality of human life is that one can engage in spiritual activities. Without spiritual activities, therefore, human life is no better than animal life. So civilized life or human, real human life means there is a religion, a religious practices. There is acceptance of spiritual authority and spiritual master. Otherwise, it is just animalistic activity. So, unfortunately, most persons who possess human bodies on the planet today are on the animal platform. They're simply engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending without spiritual activities. So it's quite clear, Shastra is quite clear, this is animal activity. You may have a more sophisticated language than the animals. Say, animal can only make a few noises, isn't it? You can only, just like any animal, you know, dog, it makes a few different kinds of barks. Or, say, bullock. You can communicate with bullock, some slightly different, you know, a few noises. You can hear the bullock is in a Mayapur Hindi, like that. They make few sounds so that you can communicate with few basic sounds, but you know, it's very elementary. So the human being might have a more sophisticated language, but if it's just used for basic bodily activities, then, you know, there's no real advantage. It's just more sophisticated or more subtle animalistic dealings. But real civilized life or human life means that there is some connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's some spiritual understanding, some realization of one's spiritual nature and spiritual position, some realization of the fact that we're fallen into this animalistic sphere, into this material body, but also realization that the human life is a special opportunity to get free from this encagement in animalistic activities. It's a special opportunity to revive that our eternal connection with the Supreme Lord, and also to, it's like a launching pad to go back to the spiritual world. So all the facilities are here. The Supreme Lord has appeared, especially in human society, many times. He's given many, many, many instructions. There are many shastras. He sent many saintly persons to preach those shastras extensively throughout the human society, to set up example, how one can practically live in such a way as to become spiritually enlightened and control the senses, while at the same time satisfying the bodily demands to in a civilized way. Maharaj was making the point that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that you know, one has to be regulated in his habits of eating and sleeping and mating and recreation. So in other words, one has to recognize, all right, I've got this material body and there are sensual demands, so it's not, the devotee is not trying to follow some impractical process or trying to situate himself in a very artificial position, like say Mayavadis who are, you know, they try to stop speaking, try to stop acting, you know, curtail all sensual activities. You know, some Mayavadis, they'll just try to freeze themselves in one position. Like there's, you know, I heard a story about a yogi once, and he's just standing like this for years and years and years and years and years. So, you know, eventually couldn't move his arm down anymore. It was just frozen in that position, and nails growing, like, you know, huge long nails. So this is, you know, okay, you know, he might be able to do, you know, for like incredible tapasya for some period of time. But, you know, inside he'll not be having any spiritual satisfaction, because the nature of the soul is to be active and to desire and to, you know, want to do things. So, you know, a person who puts himself in that position, he might freeze the body, but he can't freeze the mind like that. Mind will be going on, dwelling on so many things. And if he just puts his body into such an impractical position that he, you know, he can't f- fulfill any of his desires. Well, he'll just, you know, have to get another body after he leaves this one. So it's this is not the means for actual linking with the Supreme Lord and going back to the spiritual world. This is only means of building up frustration more. So actually, you know, there has to be some means of release for a person's sensual desires. But at the same time, one can work on controlling them and restricting them in such a way that his activity, his sensual activity, will also be beneficial for his spiritual advancement. So this is the science of Krishna consciousness, very nice in this way, because to say eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, that's all right in Krishna consciousness, that is there, but it is performed in a very civilized way, in a shastrically authorized way. So just like one's eating, he's eating Krishna prasadam, not eating, you know, just any old food. And Krishna says that yagya shishtasina santo muchante sarvakilbishai bunjate tet phagam papa ye pachanti atmakaranat. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first in sacrifice. Others who prepare food for sense gratification verily eat only sin. So there's such a gulf of difference. If you're just, you know, cooking food for your own sense enjoyment, then you're just, with every mouthful, you're getting more and more and more reactions. This is very unpleasant, very hellish condition of existence to be, you know, just implicating oneself more and more with every thought, every word, every deed. So this is going on for a materialistic person. And, you know, this can result in millions of lifetimes of taking birth again and again in the material world. And this is all like charted out in the human form of life, because the human being is responsible for its activities. Animals are they're no longer responsible. See, they don't get any more karma for their activities. Say, a dog bites somebody, but he's not getting any more karma. It's just like you told that story yesterday about the scorpion on the back of the frog. Was it yesterday or the day before? So, you know, he assured the frog he wouldn't bite him, but then when they're halfway across the river, he bit him anyway. So the frog said, "What'd you do that for?" He said, "Well, I'm a scorpion, I can't help it." So that's how it is for an animal. You know, he's in that body, he can't help the way he behaves, but he won't get any further karma. A scorpion bites somebody, if he got more karma, well, he'd keep going down and he'd never be able to get up again. So the material nature is so arranged that the living entities can work off their karma. They get down into those low conditions, but then they start to work it off, and then that way they can gradually come up again to the human form of life. So the human form of life is a position in which you know, one chalks out his future for many, many, many lifetimes. That's why one has to be really careful what he does. You know, he should, if he's intelligent, then he should hear good instruction. Tasmad guru prapajita jagyasa shreya utamam shabde parechanishna natam brahman upashamashrayam. The one who desires to be really happy and successful in life, he should search out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualities of the spiritual master is that he must have understood the conclusion of the Vedic Shastras by deliberation and be able to convince others of those conclusions. So such great souls who have taken shelter of the Supreme Lord and given up all materialistic activities should be known as bona fide spiritual masters. So one who is really intelligent, therefore, he'll take that course of action because he knows that we need guidance. We need some spiritual example to follow, some spiritual instruction, some spiritual leadership to keep us on the right track, because the senses are very, very strong. And if one gives into the senses, then immediately, you know, the senses will engage him in all kinds of unwanted activities, all kinds of sinful activities, which will be detrimental for his spiritual progress. That verse by Prahlad Maharaj. Na te vidu sparta gathim hi Vishnu durasa ye baharata manina ananda itandi rupaniyamanam te pishatantram huridam nibadha. That persons who are too much attracted by material sense enjoyment, and who accept as their leader or spiritual or guru a similarly attached materialistic person, they do not understand that the goal of life is to engage in the service of the Lord and return back to Godhead. As blind men led by another blind man miss their right path and fall into a ditch, so materially attached men led by another materially attached man are bound by the ropes of fruit of labor, which are made of very strong cords, and so they continue again and again in materialistic life. They take birth repeatedly, lifetime after lifetime, because they're not taking the right leadership or the right guidance. So the senses are very, very cruel masters. You can go on serving the senses and they'll never be satisfied. No matter how humble servant you are of the senses, how devoted you are to the senses, no matter how much you glorify the senses and accept their authority, no matter what you do, you can try anything you like, you'll never satisfy the senses. Never be satisfied, neither in this lifetime or the next lifetime or a million lifetimes or a billion lifetimes. You'll never satisfy the senses. So what is the point in becoming the godas, the servant of the senses in that way? You will be beaten ruthlessly. You will be tortured. You will be humiliated. You see? Your face will be constantly rubbed in the dirt. You'll be beaten and kicked. So this is going on, but unfortunately, mudhas, foolish persons, there, they go on like that, just being kicked around lifetime after lifetime. So the intelligent man, one who is fortunate, he gets a glimpse of the higher reality, a spiritual reality, and he realizes that this is what I want, this is what I need. I need to get free from this service of the senses, and I need to become the servant of the Supreme Personality of God, because it's only He who can protect me from the ruthless kicking of the material energy. The Maya and the senses. Only Krishna can give us that strength to overcome the influence of Maya. Daivi yesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Krishna says that this divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me, they can easily cross beyond it. So the workings of the modes of material nature are very, very, very complex. There are different elements and different modes. So they're all intertwined and interacting in many different ways. And this energy is so powerful that if a living entity is caught up in it, you know, he doesn't have much chance to get free from it. But still, Krishna is providing a escape route if you're, you know, willing to take it up. And it's this escape route is very clearly explained in all the Vedic literatures. It's explained by all the great authorities. And if one simply hears those instructions of the Lord and puts them into practice in his life, then, you know, he will escape from the influence of the material nature. Not only after leaving this body, but even while he's in this body, he can become situated on a transcendental platform. He can be acting in this world, and he can be using his senses, but his whole consciousness is completely transformed. And therefore, he's actually under the protection of the spiritual energy of the Lord, even while he's in this material world. So, that's why it is said in Gita, Mahatmanas tu mam parta daivim prakritim ashrita bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. That those who are not deluded, the great souls, they're under the protection of the divine energy. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original, inexhaustible. So in that sense, the divine energy means the spiritual energy. The devotee, he's protected by Krishna personally. Hmm? Krishna is seeing the devotee's activity, and he's taking a personal interest in the devotee's life. Hmm. Samoham sava bhuteshu name dveshu stinapriya ye bhajanti tumam bhakta maiti teshu chapiham. Krishna says, I envy no one and I'm not partial to anyone and I'm equal to all. But if one renders service to me in devotion, he is a friend, he is in me and I am a friend to him. So Krishna actually becomes a friend of that person and he helps that person. He gives that person the intelligence to cross over all the obstacles of material life. Krishna says like that, if you become conscious of me, you can cross over all the obstacles of material life by my grace, but if you act out of false ego, not hearing me, then you will be lost. So it's a clear choice. Everyone has got this clear choice. But in order to access the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is recommended by Krishna, that we should accept a bona fide spiritual master, as he explains in Gita, Tadvadi Pranipatina, that one should approach a spiritual master and render service to him submissively. Render service to him and inquire from him submissively. This is essential to have that connection to Krishna. Because although Krishna is giving us the broader instructions in the Shastra, still for particular application in our individual lives, we should have the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. And also, we should have that link to Krishna. When we offer something to Krishna, we have to offer through the media of the spiritual master and through the parampara. That is the way to approach Krishna. That is the way in which we hear from Krishna, and that is the way in which we offer to Krishna. Because we cannot directly offer to Krishna or hear from Krishna. Krishna doesn't accept that kind of dealings from such lowly persons as ourselves. We cannot just elbow our way in there to the spiritual world. And, you know, here I am, I'm qualified, I'm going to, you know, serve you directly. No, Krishna is not going to be impressed by that kind of mentality. So you cannot strong-arm your way into the spiritual world. It's not a place where you can go but with some, you know, rocket or some, you know, some or wealth or by some mundane means. You cannot buy your way into the spiritual world. Bhaktyamana abhijananti yavanyas chasmi tatva tatomam tatva togyatva vishate tadanantram. One can know the Supreme Lord only by devotion. And when one is fully conscious of the Lord by such devotion, then he can enter into the kingdom of God. But Krishna says that one who considers himself to be my devotee is not my devotee, but one who is a devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So we have to learn how to become humble and become a dasana, dasana, das. We have to become servant of the servant of the servant. And becoming servant of the servant of the servant doesn't just mean, you know, paying lip service, but it means actually becoming the servant in reality and accepting authority of the spiritual master, acting according to his instructions, and keeping oneself engaged in his service. As soon as one, you know, has a few breaks in his devotional service, you know, immediately he'll start getting the mercy of Maya in his life, so to speak. Or he'll start getting affected by Maya. Hoituki apratiyata yayatma supasidati. Bhagavatam said that devotional service should be unmotivated and it should be uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. But if we have some other motivation separate from the interest of Guru and Krishna, then that will be a stumbling block on our spiritual progress. And if we keep, you know, interrupting our devotional service to take time out for, you know, extracurricular activities, then, you know, we're going to have to swallow the reaction for that. And it's not very tasteful, not very pleasant. The reaction is it's like eating thorns and cutting your mouth. Of course, the camel, he does that, and he thinks that this is enjoyment. He eats his own blood, drinks his own blood in that way, but actually he's suffering. So we should not vacation and get ourselves all cut up. At least one who is intelligent won't do that. He'll stay on the straight and narrow path of Krishna consciousness, clinging on to the instruction and service of the spiritual master and Krishna, and keeping himself in the association of the Vaishnava devotees, those who are serious to engage in devotional service. It's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavanji Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bij, the living entities are wandering through different species of life, sometimes in higher planets, sometimes in lower planets. But one who is fortunate, he gets the Bhakti Lata Bij by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. He gets the seed of Bhakti. So one has to protect that seed. He has to water that seed by hearing and chanting. He has to fence in that small creeper by the association of the devotees. If he keeps the association of the devotees, then that is going to greatly protect him. Of course, still in the association of devotees, a person's consciousness may become deviated. He may commit offenses in the association of devotees, or somehow he may even then become attracted by sense gratification. But definitely the association of devotees will be the greatest safeguard for a person in his spiritual life. And if he rectifies his mistakes whilst in the association of devotees, then he will make spiritual progress. Suppose he commits some offense, if he atones for it in the proper way, according to the, you know, different offenses have the different methods for overcoming them. If one follows that process recommended in Shastra or recommended by his authorities, then he will be able to overcome the offenses and remain in the society of devotees. But if one doesn't take the proper remedial measures, then he may leave the society of devotees. And when he leaves the society of devotees, immediately he becomes prey, you see, to the agents of Maya, who are very expert in binding him up in different kinds of alluring situations. And in this way, you know, he forgets his spiritual identity and relationship with Krishna. And he doesn't notice that death is coming at any moment. It's like this deer in the garden who's smelling the flowers, and he's very charmed and enchanted by the, you know, different sensual situations. He doesn't realize behind him is the hunter who's about to kill him at any moment. So like that, death is, you know, just there beside us. But if one is in devotional service, he actually conquers death. Because, you know, whether he has this body or not doesn't really matter. If Krishna takes this body away, he can go on in devotional service because he's an enlightened soul. And Krishna is guaranteeing that he can continue in devotional service. He can go back to the spiritual world or get another body, and he'll go on performing devotional service. So this is the best safeguard, best immunization against anything inauspicious or anything illusory, is to remain constantly engaged. One should be afraid to stray away from devotional service or to do activities which are not bona fide devotional activity. One should be really afraid because, you know, he may think that I'm strong, I'm powerful, and I won't be defeated by Maya. But Maya is much more expert. Maya can flip the living entity on his back any moment. See, can throw him down into illusion, cover over his knowledge, and, you know, he could be finished for millions of lifetimes. So we should have a genuine fear of that, of Maya. We shouldn't be proud and think that, you know, I know what I'm doing, and Maya can't touch me. Dabbling with Maya is very dangerous, and if one does it one too many times, you know, then he'll become captured. Even at all is dangerous. A very intelligent person, intelligent devotee, He doesn't entertain it at all, Maya. One who is less intelligent, he may dabble a little bit, get his fingers burnt, but then he should use his brains and not go on dabbling in that way. So we should try to develop this first-class intelligence, and we can do that by regular hearing, attentive chanting, and keeping busy in devotional service in the Association of Devotees, as recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and in the Nectar of Devotion. There are five principal aspects of devotional service: worshipping the deities, association of devotees, chanting the holy names, hearing the Shastra, and residing in a holy place or a temple, a place where Krishna is in the center, where devotional service is being performed. If one does that, then he can remain steady and strong in the path of Krishna consciousness. So, any question or comment? Yeah.
If a devotee is materially intelligent, does that automatically make him more advanced? Or is it easier to...
Not necessarily. Sometimes persons who are a bit materially intelligent can become a bit puffed up and, you know, think that, you know, they think they can do as they like. So there can be danger in that. And on the other hand, there are many devotees, you know, who are very simple by nature, but they're very faithful, and that's spiritual intelligence. They remain on the path of Krishna consciousness in a humble and faithful way. So material intelligence is not necessarily a qualification. Of course, if one has got it, then he should apply it to understand the process of devotional service. Anyone else like to comment on this point? Is it on this point or another? Anyone like to comment on this point? Yeah. Yeah, it's important that the spiritual master is a pure devotee. if the spiritual master falls down, that means he becomes impure. And there are instances of that, at least in the Bhajanamrita. Narahari Sarkar said he's giving some advice if that should happen, and he said there have been many instances of this, even in the time of Lord Chaitanya. And there will be many instances in the future. So, in that case, that spiritual master is no longer functioning as a spiritual master. He's no longer a via media to Krishna. He can't give bona fide instructions or set a bona fide example. And one's The connection with the parampara could not be maintained through that spiritual master. So that, therefore, you know, one has to bypass that spiritual master and reestablish his link with the parampara. Now, it's advised that one should seek another spiritual master, bona fide spiritual master. And, of course, we also, in the meantime, when a person is seeking such a spiritual master, he advised to go on taking shelter of the parampara, Srila Prabhupada, the Shastras, and the ISKCON Society, the Association of Senior Vaishnavas, like that, to keep oneself on, you know, on the track of the spiritual life. You mean just someone more advanced than himself?
Someone advanced in Krishna consciousness, but not in the level of purity.
Well, of course, this verse is saying that, you know, he should be considered directly the Supreme Lord. So I don't want to water down the instructions of the Shastra. On the other hand, you know, obviously, Prabhupada's disciples are all his, they're all his disciples. They're, you know, subordinate to him. They're subservient to him, and they always see him as being much more advanced than them. But the disciples should, you know, he should see his spiritual master as the representative of Srila Prabhupada. And it wouldn't be a good, you know, mentality to be sort of looking out for reasons why he's not, you know, a pure representative of Srila Prabhupada. Of course, it doesn't mean that a person has to be a blind man. You know, if say a spiritual master started to do things which were, you know, obviously not representative of Prabhupada or of the Parampara, then, I mean, one would have to take note of that and, you know, consult other senior Vaishnavas for advice. But otherwise, you know, as long as that, you know, spiritual master isn't manifesting any kind of dubious activities, but he's, you know, representing nicely Srila Prabhupada, then we should consider he's a transparent by immediate to Srila Prabhupada, and he's a pure representative of Srila Prabhupada. Not necessarily having to think that he's equal to Srila Prabhupada. You know, it's not that it's not that we should think like that. Any comment at this point, Murray?
Well, some of the things you were saying on this subject. Definitely the disciple has to think that the spiritual master is more advanced. Always. And as Maharaj is saying, that if the guru is acting, following nicely the instructions of his spiritual master, then he's considered pure devotee. They're all different levels of pure devotee. Mahabhagavat is very rare. But we consider Prabhupada's position as Mahabhagavat position. And there have been some, even amongst Prabhupada's godbrothers, who say that most probably Prabhupada would be the last Mahabhagavat for a while. So, but nevertheless, there may be many pure devotees. And if one follows a pure devotee, who's in the Parampara and proper Sampradaya, then assured of reaching the goal of spiritual life.
I'd like to read the part of the next verse. It says, the spiritual master is as good as the supreme personality of Godhead, and therefore one who is very serious about spiritual advancement must regard the spiritual master in this way. Even a slight deviation from this understanding can create disaster in the disciples that is to the posterities.
Well, I think in the purport there, Maharaj, that Prabhupada explains in what particular way we should think the spiritual master is as good as the personality of Godhead, and that he carries the instructions of the personality of Godhead everywhere. I think he says right there in the purport. I don't know if it's that one, it might be the next one. But if he carries the instructions of the Supreme Personality, because he carries the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere, then he's to be considered as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I remember reading it. It's not that Guru is God or can, you know, manifest some of the unlimited qualities of Krishna. Of course, if Krishna desires, he can do also. But we shouldn't be thinking like that, Guru can, has the unlimited qualities of Krishna. Because he's carrying, he's a pure representative of his guru, and he's carrying the message of Krishna everywhere, then he's as good as the personality of God.
The Supreme Personality of God gives real knowledge to the entire world, and the spiritual master, as the representative of the Supreme God, carries the message throughout the world. Therefore, on the absolute platform, there's no difference between the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of God.
There's a difference between being the same as and as good as.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it won't be healthy for the disciple to... Yeah, it won't be healthy for the disciple to, start speculating in that way. Actually, he shouldn't speculate on the level of consciousness of his spiritual master. So he should see him as a pure representative of Srila Prabhupada, who is a pure representative of his spiritual master, in that way, the pure representatives of Krishna. And naturally, still there's a hierarchy in this parampara. It's automatically there. Going back all the way to Krishna, going up to Krishna. Well, it means that he has, knowledge of Krishna and his eternal relationship with Krishna and knows how to guide us in our spiritual development, spiritual advancement, and whatever is necessary for him to know for that activity, that service, and Krishna will automatically inform him. He'll reveal everything to him. So in that sense, he knows everything required. It doesn't mean, though, in a mundane way, like, that the spiritual master right now can tell you, what's happening in, so-and-so's house, halfway, 5 miles down the road or whatever. who's talking to who, exactly what they're saying, Well, it obviously doesn't mean like that. By hearing, by association, by even advice of senior Vaishnavas. Of course, again, we don't want to, one shouldn't get into, too much of a kind of nitpicking type of consciousness like that. One has to judge broadly by their activities. One can obviously hear whether they're presenting their philosophy in a bona fide way or not. One can see by their activities if they're always absorbed in devotional service and glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then, there is a question of individual attraction to particular personalities, how they can inspire a particular devotee, or whether a devotee also, feels that he can get sufficient association with a particular personality. That may also be consideration. Sufficiently frequently can get association with a particular personality to get that kind of guidance that he needs in his spiritual life. So there's, you know, there has to be practical consideration like that by the devotee. But how to ascertain? It's mainly by hearing and by association and by some guidance from other senior Vaishnavas.
I was just thinking of the statement in Haribhakti Nivas where mentioned there that both guru and disciple have to examine each other's characters for some length of time. Mm. Characters, words, actions. After thorough examination, guru, disciple to guru, the relationship can be formed. Progress can be made in that direction.
If someone's guru has fallen, does that mean he never was a pure devotee, or he was a pure devotee and fell from that position?
Could be either. Because if we have fallen from the spiritual world, that means at one time we were in a position of being pure, but had become impure. So therefore, a pure person can become impure.
Bhagavad-gaya's whole philosophy is swarup a bit. He goes into the whole thing very quite precisely. He defines how there's those nityasas who are completely untinged by any material quality whatsoever, very rare souls. And then he calls the conditions of nitya samsara, which means kind of dipping in, dipping out. So this is a devotee, but at any one time he can be in, and at any one time he can be out. But by good association and by following the proper process, he can again become situated in that platform of Vaikasakti, and then he's back on that. In a fixed situation.
Anyone else comment on this?
Just one question on the material world. We said that there's so many cheaters and so many people presenting themselves as elevated personalities and so many sects and religions. So, from having experience with so many personalities, women, a little faith to follow, to be submissive to authority, the material world people, they're very doubtful, suspicious. So even amongst, you know, as devotees, that conditioning is there. So how to try to purify that, to develop that, you know, trust.
Yeah, by practicing the process, by following the process. Because the process works, so you know, more you follow the process, the more you can become convinced of its efficacy. The more you can become, you know, firmly established on the spiritual platform. Anyway, there's a place where Prabhupada said Guru is one. So in that sense, you know, Guru is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And, you know, if one has you know, taken bona fide instruction, bona fide guidance, and, you know, by that he can be elevated to go back home, back to Godhead. How exactly that, you know, eternal relationship with the spiritual master functions or manifests itself in future, that can vary according to the, you know, desire or will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I think we shouldn't, you know, boggle our minds with such hypothetical questions. If the instruction is good and we follow, then we'll be able to go back to Godhead. Krishna will keep, you know, helping that devotee, that sincere devotee.
I was just going to say that, man, you can't leave out the factor of Krishna. Sometimes you just, you know, people's devotees think it's just me and the guru. And if, you know, if something happens there, then, you know, I'm sort of floating off in limbo somewhere. But, you know, you can't leave Krishna out of the equation. And certainly, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it can compensate in so many ways.
Well, we have to take decision as far as possible according to Guru Sadhu Shastra. And, you know, broadly speaking, you know, if the personalities are authorized, I think, you know, we have to have some trust and faith that they can help us. Can't guarantee that there won't be mishaps. And, you know, even personalities that Prabhupada indicated, there are some mishaps there. The Shastras say that there will be mishaps. So, you know, we just have to, if that happens, we have to take it in our stride and you know, do what the Shastras and the Vaishnava authorities say in such a case. So one can say there may be some element of risk in any situation. But, you know, that, I think, that we have to still, you know, take that jump of placing our faith in one spiritual master or another to give us that guidance and, you know, have trust that Krishna is there and he's going to, as Maharaj said, he's going to, you know, cover for us if there's some, if some, something goes wrong, he'll help us.
In that same way, it's all about the eternal relationship with Guru. Sometimes we tend to forget that actually we're eternal living entities. So you have eternal relationships with Krishna. So of course, naturally, we have an eternal relationship with. I mean, we actually all have an eternal relationship with each other. But we've forgotten that. So why not have an eternal relationship with the spiritual master? He's also part of that Vaishnava ascending.
Maybe the hookup might be a little bit differently manifest. Hookup may come later than sooner. Nevertheless, the hookup will be there sometime. You're going for high positions. You have to have a big safety net.
That's why Prabhupada said, whatever happens, don't leave ISKCON.
Is there any limit to how many shishigurus one can have?
Yeah, I guess so, in the sense that yes and no. No in the sense that, you know, all the Vaishnava acharyas are Shiksha Gurus, and Ananta Koti Vaishnava Niki Jai, we offer our obeisances onto the, you know, unlimited numbers of Vaishnavas. But then from another angle of vision, practicality. If you're going to take, you know, instructions, you can't just be going around trying to take instruction from, you know, everybody. You've got to, you know, narrow down that number as far as practical.
There should be a good relationship between Diksha and a Shishya Guru, not this conflicting instruction from Diksha Guru and conflicting another instruction from Shishya.
That wouldn't be very healthy for a devotee's spiritual life, if it should eventuate. Hopefully that wouldn't. But,
generally, the etiquette, the permission
is sought
from the
Diksha. Yes.
To seek instruction
from the Shikshan. And even on an ongoing basis, I think that's in that book also, Vajanamrita, that, you know, if one is getting instruction, even taking instruction from a Shiksha Guru, he should, you know, come to his initiating spiritual master for just confirmation that that's all right, to apply it in his life. Of course, after, if they initiate spiritual master already left the planet, then more difficult, you know, to go and confirm that with him. But well, if he had the blessings of a senior Vaishnavas, then, you know, he could go on taking instruction from a particular personality as far as possible to maintain a harmonious situation within one's spiritual life. Enough harmonious, you know, instruction that one is receiving as far as possible. But generally, after all, you know, the goal is the same, the teachings are the same, so the instructions are going to be generally harmonious with one another. And if there should occur to be some, you know, kind of seeming difference of opinion, then most likely, if those spiritual masters were present, they could consult one another about, you know, that particular devotee. Or else, you know, a group of senior Vaishnavas could advise that devotee how to act. We have to also take shelter in the Vaishnav Sangha. Hari Guru Vaishnava. So we are servant of Krishna and the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, and we'll take instruction from Krishna and spiritual master and the Vaishnavas.
Is that example that says for Maharaj saying that Krishna was instructing into the devotee, the Bhakta, Maharaj, so he compiled that Japa reformer. He gave a nice example. He felt that Krishna can instruct for any of his devotees.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah.
Of course, that doesn't mean that one would accept anybody as a spiritual master. But the same with Bilva Mangal Thakur. Of course, you know, he got some instruction through Chintamani. So he did. I mean, he did give her honor as an instructing spiritual master. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, if you see some, you know, if you hear some good advice somewhere, that you accept that, you know, every person who instructs you as an instructing spiritual master. But the great sages have, you know, they've learned things from animals. Isn't there an example in the Bhagavatam?
Yeah.
Bhagavatam. Learning lessons from so many different places. And Janaka Pandit also in his Niti Shastra, you know, he said, just for example, he said there's certain lessons can be learned from a dog. Watchfulness and faithfulness and so on and so forth. Look at this last.
This is a copy in the library. It's really fun.
Yeah, it's interesting. But okay, so we'd like to thank the devotees for their hospitality, and you know, we hope that everyone will be enlivened to go on working hard for Krishna, cooperate together, and make Nuvarsan the successful project that we all want it to be. And you know, no doubt there are going to be hiccups and obstacles, but you know, devotees should take those things within their stride and cooperate together to overcome. Remain unified. What is it? United we stand, divided we fall.